You are listening to the Photo Bomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photo Bomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
Well, good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir. We were away for a week. We missed a week of the podcast.
We went dark,
and we didn't even say a word about it. We didn't apologize. We didn't say, hey, we're not on the air this week. We just went dark, and F all, y'all.
And nothing happened.
You know, we didn't even say a word about it. I think at some point, the loyal listeners of the show understand that every once in a while, there's just going to be a missing week.
Right, yeah, you know, with travel and family and stuff, you know, it's like, basically, by saying we shouldn't have a week off is like saying, you know, we don't deserve a vacation, is basically...
Well, we absolutely deserve a vacation. Recording a good 20 to 30 minute broadcast every week is exhausting. We need our time off from that. How could we be expected to fulfill that commitment on a weekly basis?
30 minutes a week for you people?
Oh, slave drivers.
What's the best part about going dark for a week is that nobody complained.
No, nobody says a word. Nobody's like, where's the podcast?
So our listener must have also been on vacation.
Yes. So you were gone the week. That's why we didn't do it. You were off in San Diego.
I was gone for 12 days. Yeah, I was in San Diego speaking to the California professional photographers at West Coast School, and then I did a full-day workshop for the San Diego professional photographers. Then I went to Disneyland, and then I went to L.A., and I saw some stuff, and then I went to Austin and gave a presentation for the Austin Professional Photographers Association, and where I met a great guy named Steve, and Steve came up to me, and he said, I listen to your podcast every week. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Steve is the listener. He's the one.
Yeah, he is there. I told him, I said, there you are. He did mention that you have a buttery golden voice.
So, according to you, they all do. That's all they have to say. They go, that podcast, Gary is such a knowledgeable and informative educator about photography, and Boo Ray has a buttery voice.
Yes, that's true. That's pretty much the way it goes. Hey, you know what? Thanks to everybody who came out and the listeners, and thank you, Steve. For being out of the 300 people I spoke to over that week, the one person that listens to the show. Thanks, Steve. You're the best. Love you, buddy.
Before I forget, and first of all, I want to go a little bit into Disneyland versus Disney World, but we must talk about the big announcement this week, which I have been waiting for you to make for some time now because I was in the know. And share with us, please, what the big announcement was.
We, my wife, Julie and I are expecting our second
That's
child.
Right. Very nice.
Yeah. Thank Very you. Nice. Yeah. Talk December. Crap. Yeah. Nice. So basically I don't think I'm gonna be able to do the podcast anymore. No, this is my only refuge, clinging to a rock in the tumultuous sea, be able to go to the studio on a Saturday or a Sunday for a couple of hours and record podcasts. It'd be like,
I have to go, sweetie. I'm sorry. This is a commitment that I have to do. The listeners expect it.
The listener expects this podcast to come out on Monday. No, so we're pretty excited. About 15, 16 weeks along, which, you know, is almost halfway there. And we're expecting the baby on December 1st. We don't know yet if it's a boy or a girl. The information exists, but we've chosen not to find out yet, although I think we are going to find out in advance. And we're pretty excited. We're calling it Project Spartacus.
Okay. All right.
Because we have something to refer to it. And Ellie,
why does it need to be called something?
I don't know.
Okay.
Just because it's
just checking. You know, just go and throw that in there. Because if it needs to be called something, I obviously missed this boat when I was having my children. We didn't have.
We didn't call the pregnancy something.
No, we didn't have a designated name for the pregnancy. You know.
Well, we needed to have a way to refer to, because we tried to keep a pretty tight lid on it. We told our parents and our siblings. And some close friends, like you've been in the know for a couple of months now, we needed something to refer to it so that if we could talk about it, you know, without saying the baby or the pregnancy or maternity, so we just called it Project Spartacus, which actually draws more attention to itself than pregnancy, so it's kind of counterproductive in a way.
I had a friend of mine that whenever he wanted to talk about sex in front of his kids would refer to it as making cappuccino.
Ooh, that
you're like, sweetie, is there any chance we can have some cappuccino tonight?
So begging your spouse for sex in front of your kids, but using a code word to do it.
There you go. Yeah, I like that idea. So this brings to mind another question that I have for you. Something I found interesting is that you told me about this some time ago, and I've checked in with you every couple of weeks and said, hey, you know, have you released this information yet? And each time I have, you've said to me, no, you told someone, didn't you? And I've said, no, I haven't told anyone. And I think what I find interesting about this is that you almost just expect that I would have told someone, even though you told me not to tell someone. And I don't think this is personal against me at all. I think it's the way everyone is today, that when you tell somebody, listen, I'm going to tell you this, I don't want you to tell anybody, you almost expect that they're going to break, that they're going to tell someone, even though you asked them.
You have to. You have to. I mean, okay, so you did tell somebody.
I told Bobby, but when you told me, when you told me about it, I said, okay, I'm telling Bobby. Let me just tell the world right now. If you tell me to keep a secret, what you're really telling me to do is keep it a secret from everyone but my wife, because I don't keep secrets from my wife. So if you don't want my wife to know, don't tell me. But if you want only my wife to know and me, you can tell me, and I will not tell a single person on the planet other than my wife until you give me the go ahead, and nor will she, you know. And I think that's rare. I think most people, you just kind of expect, well, I tell them not to tell anybody, but then they kind of do.
God, you're so noble.
It's not really. I think it's interesting that you know, what's the old joke about, you know, listen, I didn't tell anybody your secret. It's the people I told who couldn't keep their mouths shut.
Well, I mean, it's almost expected that there's going to be somebody. You know, how many times have you had this conversation in your life? We had this conversation before we got on the air where you go, okay, I'm not supposed to tell anybody this.
Right.
But Gary and Julie are having a baby. You know, somebody,
right.
Somebody's going to tell somebody.
And you tell somebody not to tell anybody, and then they tell somebody not to tell anybody, and then they tell somebody.
And that's right. But in reality, you should just not tell anybody anything ever.
No. No.
Right. And then nobody will find out, because you know whose fault it is if the word gets out? It's you, because you told somebody. You told somebody your secret, and whether you trust them or not, you let it go past yourself, so therefore it's your fault.
That's right. When you say I blame the person who let it out of the bag, well, no, you're the person who let it out of the bag.
Yes, because people are jerks.
People are no damn good.
They're no good. See? Bah!
I also don't have a problem if people don't tell me things. But see, I think that's where it comes from, too. It comes from that person who finds out that you knew a secret and didn't tell them, and then gets mad at you, and you say, right. "Well, I was sworn to secrecy." Yeah, but you could have told me. I don't think you understand what sworn to secrecy means.
Yes,
I wasn't.
I've had this situation with my wife before, where somebody told me something and told me not even to tell her, and I thought, "Why would you do that?"
No,
you give me a time bomb.
No,
and next time she's going to ask me,
I don't think it's
what's
fair.
On your mind.
No. I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair to say you can't tell your wife, because you're supposed to have one person in your life who you can share anything with, and one person in your life who you don't have to keep in check what you're saying when you're around them, and that should be your spouse.
So my
barista.
I don't think
that's fair.
Yeah, you're right. Your
but other than that, I was talking to somebody the other day who was, we were discussing something, and they said, okay, wait a minute. They were trying to figure something out, and they said, oh, it was my sister. She goes, okay, I'm going to tell you something that, okay, nobody knows this yet. And I said, stop right there. Think about it. Do you need to tell me this? Because if you're not supposed to tell anyone, and you don't really need to tell me this, I would prefer it if you don't tell me. I don't want to know whatever this thing is that you're about to tell me that you're not supposed to tell me. Because now it's on me. Now I have to be sure that I don't tell anybody, because I know, you know, no, if I'm not supposed to know, just keep me in the dark. I'm perfectly okay.
So to our listeners out there, if you have a deep, dark secret that you can't let anybody know, you give it to Boo-Ray and it goes in the Boo-Ray vault.
It does. Because, you know, but the only way that works is it has to be reciprocal. So like, if someone told you in secret, you know, tomorrow, by the way, we're going to fire Boo-Ray from, you know, doing IPC Live. You know, but
oh, I forgot to tell you.
Yeah,
by
but you
the
can't.
Way.
But you can't. But you can't tell anybody. And then later, they fired me, and you were like, "Yeah, I knew about that." I wouldn't be mad at you. I would be like, "Okay." I mean, I get it. If someone tells you something and you're not supposed to tell, then you're not supposed to tell. Period. Yeah.
But when you tell somebody something and they're not supposed to tell, you've given them a time bomb.
You have.
Basically, like, yeah. It's not fair. It's not
no,
right.
No, it's
don't
not.
Tell
no,
people
no.
Stuff
it,
if they
it's
don't
true
need to
because
know.
It's your secret and now you're sharing because you don't want to carry it alone. You share it with somebody else and you're giving them the burden.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's some selfish ass moves.
Yeah,
right, there.
Right. So just keep your damn secret. That's like I do with my sister. She was like, I'm not supposed to tell anybody. I'm like, then don't. Please. Yeah, please don't tell me. I don't want to know if you're not supposed to
tell anybody.
Because
you know what I am right at this moment? I'm totally fine without knowing what's about to come out of your mouth. I don't need to know it if it's going to complicate my life. And you know what? Most of the time, I probably wouldn't even care about it. I just don't care about you or your secrets. Or what makes your life interesting.
Let's get
things
down to the
nitty-gritty
of not caring about you and your life.
All I ever think about is myself, so can you please just take right. all the stuff that's not about me out of the conversation?
Right.
Hey, so, speaking of awesome stuff that happened this week, well, 2 weeks ago now, so you know how I have a sweating problem, right? Like, you're familiar with my sweating problem?
No. You?
Yes.
With the
yes.
sweating? This is something we've never discussed on the show.
We've discussed this on the show many times, if you go back to the archives.
We've discussed this.
Because I sweat like I'm being interrogated by the freaking Inquisition. I'm just sweating under my arms. And anyway, so this is great. So for you listeners who've been really concerned, I went to a doctor, and they fixed the problem. I don't sweat anymore.
So, yeah. So, this is big deal, because how is that going? It's
great.
And
great,
And this was a pill?
No, it's a topical solution. So for those of you sweaters out there,
a topical solution.
Yes,
it sounds like another word for the Holocaust. When you,
it's a topical solution. It's like has to do with current events. You know, it's very topical.
It's a topical solution. It sounds nefarious and evil. We have a topical solution for the problem.
So we will wipe
out the entire country.
What I have is it's a problem that affects 3% of people, and it's called hyperhidrosis, and it's basically like they have no idea why it happens, but some sweat glands get like deranged and they just start working 24/7. So I would be like taking two or three changes of shirts to work with me and stuff like that, and it was just ridiculous because you just even just sitting in an ice cold room doing nothing, you're just pouring sweat out of your armpits. So I seriously, it was fixed. I've been dealing with this, trying to figure out like homeopathic remedies for two years.
Right.
I go to the dermatologist. He like checks me out and he goes, "Okay, here's a prescription." Boom. The next day, I'm done. I'm fixed.
You're done. Just
I'm
like
fixed
that.
Within a day. Yeah. Within a day.
I'm not
fixed.
So big on the homeopathic. My wife will do. I've got this. If you take this and you rub this homeopathic thing on your feet, it will help you with your stress. And I'm like, or I could just take a pill. That was developed by a scientist.
There's homeopathy that's there's good and bad. Most of it is very, very bad from what I've discovered. It's all like, take this, you know, extract of ginger root and then your cancer will go away. There's like bad homeopathy and there's lots of bad. But like, for example, you can't find a cough syrup for a child under two that doesn't have the label homeopathic on it.
That's the thing, so now, we had some little things we used to give, like when the kids were teething, there was a little tiny homeopathic pill that we would give them to help them with that, and it seemed to work. I don't know,
we use gripe water, which is like fennel and crap like that, and you just, you know, and it works because it's basically you just give them a dose of sugar, so they're like, "Ooh, that's delicious, I'll shut up now." You know?
There you go. I'm pretty sure that's what was going on with our pill
it's
too.
Basically just got a lot of sugar in it. But I'm always looking for like what is, and some of these things are they work. There is science behind some solutions that you don't have to go buy technical medicine for. But like for the most part, if you've got a medical problem or if you've got something that, let's say, okay, because for example, I did some research. I cut out the caffeine and I did a few different things like that and tried a few different things over the course of a couple of years to see if it would have any positive effect, and nothing worked. And so I just dealt with it. And finally, I have insurance. Like, I pay a lot of money for insurance. So I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to go to the doctor. So I went to the dermatologist. And turns out, interestingly enough, I get in there and I'm in the paper gown because they got to check out your whole self when you go to the dermatologist.
Your whole
and they,
self?
Well, yeah, the whole thing. Yeah, they look at it all. And I did a skin cancer screening, so they check out all your freckles and moles and make sure you're good to go and stuff like that. Because while I was there, it's all part of the service.
It's a full service dermatology office.
And so I'm sitting there with nothing on but this paper gown, and the guy walks in, the dermatologist, and I had done his headshot like within the last couple of months. And so I'm sitting there, like, in my
paper gown. That's not awkward. And I go, so here's
the thought that I had. I thought that I had, because, you know, like most professional people, like getting your photo taken could be fairly awkward and uncomfortable for a lot of people, you know? And so I'm thinking, man, you know, photographers are always like telling you, get on the other side of the camera and get photographs so you know what it feels like for your clients. And I don't really ever do that. And so I'm sitting there going, okay, I know how that feels, but like a thousand times worse because I don't have pants on.
Right, right. and as a dermatologist or a doctor, they have that interesting thing that we have, which is in my day-to-day working with people and meeting people, I never think that there's a chance that someday I might see that person naked. You know,
yeah, exactly.
somebody's taking my headshot, or they're checking me out at the grocery store, or whatever. There's no chance that by chance tomorrow, the person who checked me out at Publix is suddenly going to be naked in front of me. But if you're a doctor, that could happen.
Right. I mean, you go from a position of, this is why I'm starting to realize why people who are thinking that they're photographers and they just get so self-important about what they do, and when they start speaking and doing gigs and stuff, you get some real like arrogant jerk types in the photography industry, as I'm sure in any industry. And I'm sitting there going, like, this guy's about to fix my body with science,
right?
And I took his picture.
Yes.
Like, let's put our careers into perspective here. You know what I mean?
But, You've been dealing with this problem your whole life. He's going to diagnose it and fix it for you, markedly making your life better for the rest of your life. And you took a headshot that goes on his website.
Yeah. He knew what was wrong with me over the phone.
Right.
Like, I didn't actually even need. He just needed to verify that I'm not a crazy person trying to get prescription deodorant for my meth lab or something.
Speaking of doctors over the phone, if you're a PPA member and you haven't signed up for Teladoc, Teladoc is, if you have kids especially, Teladoc is the bomb. PPA has.
Did you sign up for Teladoc?
The thing about Teladoc is you forget to use it. You forget that you have it. And I had to remind my family, because it just happened last week where Mackie's eye started to look pretty red, and Bobby was like, oh, I think it's maybe the pink eye, you know, and she was like, okay, well, tomorrow morning, we'll check it in the morning, and okay, so we checked it in the morning, and it looked worse, and Bobby's like, okay, well, we're going to have to call the doctor and try and get you in, and I was like, no, we don't. Come here, Mackie. Walked her in, set her down in front of the computer, boop, 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 Teladoc. Here comes a person up on the screen. Hi, what's the problem? I said, tell him. Mackie goes, I have right here. And he goes, oh, yeah, that's pink eye. I'm going to send a prescription right into your pharmacy right now. It should be ready in about 15 minutes. Thank you very much. 15 minutes later, I went and picked up the stuff, and she was fine within a day because we got it right away. We didn't have to go make a doctor's appointment. We didn't have to go to the emergency room. And by the way, if you're curious, the number one thing people call Teladoc for is pink eye. That's actually a thing. The number one thing that they get calls for is pink eye. But you know, I
absolutely love that service. And I'll tell you why, because when you have a kid and you, let's say that they come down with something on the weekend, you cannot get into a doctor.
No.
You have to go to the emergency room, and then you got to wait like 3-4 hours, and you got to see it. Then you got to see whatever 9-year-old just got promoted to doctor in the emergency room, and then, you know, they don't know or care about you at all. They're just doing triage because everybody has to go to the emergency room on the weekend, so it's an absolute cluster.
Right.
And so the Teladoc is killer because it's like you just don't even have to leave your house. If it's common problems like, oh, you know, they got a fever, or you know, you got a pink eye or something, like, you can just get a prescription, get taken care of there. It's fantastic. On a Sunday at 7 o'clock at night, you're fine, and you don't have to go to the emergency room for some stupid thing where you're going to sit there for hours. It's totally, I think, I don't even remember what it costs, like $10 a month or
$15 like $9 a month, I think, or something like that. But it also begs the question of, if a guy can just come on the screen and just look at you and go, yeah, you need pink eye stuff, and make that prescription, why can't I just go get the pink eye medicine without having to even talk to that guy? Who's abusing the pink eye medicine? Are there people who are jonesing under the overpass for the pink eye medicine, you know, that they're stealing stereos for the pink eye medicine?
You don't know what people are going to make out of that controlled substance. I mean, there could be a new designer drug made out of pink eye medicine.
Homeopathic heroin. I think, you know, if it's like an antibiotic that you need or whatever, why do we even have to go?
Because antibiotics have to be under tight control because we're running out of antibiotics.
Is that what
like the diseases are evolving because we so use them the wrong way. If they were just available, they're generally harmless, although they do have some side effects, like you can't use them while you're doing certain things. But the main reason why you can't just have antibiotics out there is because they need to be controlled, because we only have so many lines of defense against disease. Mm-hmm. If you go check out the World Health Organization's website and do a little research on like how close we are to our last line of defense on like on those types of medicines, it's terrifying. The world isn't gonna, humanity isn't gonna die because of climate change or an asteroid. It's right. gonna be because dum-dums don't use all their pills, or they use, you know what I mean? Like, it's just going to be because disease has evolved to the point it's yes. going to wipe us off the planet.
Oh, you want to see a movie that'll scare the crap out of you? Watch Contagion, which is about, you know, just a little bug and how fast it spreads around the world. Okay, so here's the thing. Remember how we used to have this podcast where we would spend like the first 5 minutes talking about whatever, and then we would spend the next 25 minutes talking about photography? We're now at the point where we spend the first 25 minutes talking about whatever and the last 5 minutes talking about photography.
Because the other stuff we talk about is better. Let's just admit it.
Okay, so let's talk about photography. And I want to talk about the video, the Kickstarter thing that we just watched before we went on the air. You said you need to watch this video. And that's and that is, in fact, a fascinating little device that is being developed for Kickstarter. And why don't you tell us about it?
Well, okay, so basically there's a device on Kickstarter called Arsenal, the Intelligent Camera Assistant. This was posted this past week on our Facebook page. And by the way, for listeners out there, we very often discuss stories that we post on the Facebook page throughout the week. So if you want to be like hip to what we're going to talk about on the show, it's a good idea to keep an eye on the Facebook page. Just look for Photobomb Podcast on Facebook. So basically, this is out of this is under the camera equipment on Kickstarter, but it's basically going to happen because it's got 16,000 backers have pledged $2.5 million when they were only asking for $50,000.
Wow.
To get this. So what it is, it is a device that sits in the hot shoe, the actual connection goes through your camera's kind of USB port or PC connection port, something like that. And essentially what it does is it uses intelligent learning to analyze and artificial intelligence to analyze a scene when you're taking a photo to make you take the absolute best photo. It'll see whether something's moving and it'll adjust the shutter speed, or it can focus stack, it can do HDR, it can do time lapses, and it analyzes the scene based on these set criteria, 18 different criteria, and it chooses the best setting, and you control it all from your phone, and you can even trigger it from your phone or get a preview of what the image is going to look like after it's done doing its thing. It basically makes it so that all you basically have to do is compose the image, and then the Arsenal will make a really pretty picture for you without you having to even think about what your camera settings are. It chooses the optimal settings. It's actually even got a database with thousands and thousands and thousands of photos in it, and it will look at the scene through the camera, and it will find a similar photo and analyze the metadata and match your settings so that you can get a similar effect of the photo that's in its data bank. Like, it's an incredibly, incredibly cool device, but it raises the question. And actually, thinking about it now, it does raise the question, like, how does this technology affect the industry? This is the first thing like this that I've seen. And so,
well, let me... Yeah, there's a lot of questions, but let me say this. In my mind, this is only the logical next step in what we are already using, but maybe we don't realize it. The current technology we have in the camera, when you're using auto settings on a camera now, it actually is analyzing other images, although they're not actual images that are in the camera. But the manufacturers, like when you're using an auto setting on your camera now, you're using meter reading mode is that you're using matrix or evaluative, I think on the Canon it's called. That is actually doing a little bit of that. When it's telling you this is the proper exposure for this shot, it's analyzing the whole scene and comparing what it's seeing to a database that is built into the chip of the camera. So it sees, okay, dark in the middle, light on the outside. This is a portrait, so which means I need the middle to be a little bit brighter than normal, because this is probably a portrait that is backlit. Your camera does do that now. It just doesn't it's giving you a meter reading, and you're going, okay, this is the proper meter reading. And that meter reading, if you were to do an all over meter reading of the scene you know, a general meter reading, it would actually be darker. But because you're in evaluative mode, it's actually looking at the elements and comparing it to a database to say, no, you need to lighten this up a little bit, because I think what you're doing here is you're taking a portrait of a person who is backlit. And so I think that this center does, this is why, like on the Canon camera, wherever you put the focus point in evaluative mode is considered much more important, and it pays attention to that. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. So the device is doing the same thing. It's just that once it does that for you, it then also adds, you know, oh, is there motion in the photo? And is there this in the photo? And is there that? It's just, it's really taking it to the nth degree. You know, to taking the, before it was a tool to help you make the choice yourself. Now it's just making the choice for you.
If you're out shooting with somebody who's, and here's the thing, I wanted to get to a comment that, and this is the impression that I had when I saw it. Every sample shown in the video is of landscape photography.
Yeah.
And so Matt Giambra commented, it seems like a great idea for landscape photography. Portraits and weddings, not sure if I'm seeing the immediate benefit.
No, because it's only going to work with natural light. It can't possibly work with flash because it doesn't know where the flash is pointed and what's going to happen, you know. I mean, unless eventually you figure out a way to have that also work while you have the off-camera flash in TTL mode so that it takes, you know, takes the picture, figures out where the flash is pointed, and then makes adjustments for you, which, hey, you know, 5 years down the line.
the point is what this thing can do, because this is cool. I think for a lot of people, it's a novelty. You know, if you go out with somebody, like I've been out shooting with Randy Van Dynen, and you should see the way that guy analyzes a scene, walks around it, decides what he's going to do, brackets everything. You know, and there's a lot of post-processing involved in a lot of things, and just a lot of thought that goes into it as far as settings goes. And you don't have to do that. This is like plugging Randy Van Dynen into your hot shoe. You know, it's basically like
Randy Van Dynen plugged in a hot shoe.
Oh, God.
Here's the thing, though, and this makes me weep for landscape photographers, that if this is, works the way that they say it's going to work. But, I'm a little sick of landscape photography anyway. because everybody with a phone is a landscape photographer now, you know.
I took some awesome landscape photos when we were in California with my phone, you know.
How many pictures of the sunset do we need? You know, this... And also, it's not cheap, right? Isn't it like $150, $175?
I was looking at it, and I just closed the webpage. Thanks for bringing that up. I don't know what's on the... I think it's about $200.
Okay, so let's analyze who this is for then, okay? So let's start with, it's going to cost you $200. Second, it's only going to work on a DSLR.
It works on mirrorless cameras too.
Okay, with a tripod. So you have to be a person...
No, it works handheld as well?
Handheld, but... If you're going to shoot landscapes, you probably want a tripod. So here's you're talking about a guy who already wants to shoot landscapes so bad that he has a good expensive camera for doing it, and he's going out and dedicating his time to doing it, and he wants to do it so bad that he's willing to spend $200 on this device to do it for him. And I think in my experience, most people who want to do it that bad don't – the process is part of the fun. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, you know, the knowledge, you find that a lot of landscape photographers specifically are on the more technical side of photography, whereas, you know, you get a lot of portrait and wedding shooters and people who shoot stuff freehand and available light out in the open or dragging couches into fields or whatever. People who shoot a little more from an emotional perspective and maybe know how to operate their equipment but aren't as geeked out by the gear. You know what I mean? Aren't as into the technical side of it. And I think you're kind of hitting the nail on the head that landscape photographers, people who get really turned on by, you know, getting out there and at 6 a.m. and waiting for the sun to come up. And, like, these are people who enjoy the technical aspect of it. So you would say that maybe they're marketing to a group of people who might shy away from this on that principle. However, I would tell you this. They asked for $50,000 and they got $2.5 million. So there's
obviously there's a market. Yeah, obviously there's a market, but I still got to believe that anyone who would really love this is somebody who actually has the knowledge to do it without the device, and it's more this will just be cool because, you know, I mean, like, I have the knowledge for downloading the files from my camera to my computer and putting them on Facebook, but it's cool to have a Wi-Fi card that sends it automatically to my camera, you know. Mm. And I think it's kind of a little, it would be a little bit of that. I just don't know how much of the AI would really be a factor.
Well, here's the thing that's going to happen. This type of technology is already becoming, it's already proliferating pretty strongly. But this type of machine learning and AI that can control an image to get these sort of, are going to end up where in everybody's pocket in a phone. Right. And in a lot of ways already are.
Right.
And so you're going to get people who can take images, like award-winning landscape images that would make Ansel Adams weep, you know, are going to be able to just pull out their phone and do that with the push of a button.
Yes.
And I think that that's pretty tough, you know, considering luckily for most people, landscape photography isn't, unless you're Peter Lick or somebody, like landscape photography isn't the thing that most professional photographers are making their money on. They're still in portrait photography, wedding photography, commercial photography. In most of that, there's still a very human element of creativity that has to come into the concept. And I think that if you get into photographers like Sam Jones and Michael Greco and Annie Leibovitz and just high-end like commercial portrait and fashion photographers, even like Lindsay Adler and Sue Bryce, it's like they're not necessarily getting paid for their ability to push the buttons on a camera and to you and even to light. They're paying for that, getting paid for their idea more than anything else. Okay. And that's the thing that a machine can't do yet. And that's the hardest, is going to be to come up with an idea that nobody else has thought of, to come up with something unique, and to come up with an idea that's going to sell to a client, to come up with an idea that's going to make people feel something. That's the human element in photography, I think, that's the most important. And so as you get higher up in commercial photography, in portrait photography, and you refine your style, I think you find that the most successful photographers, the ones that people go absolutely crazy for their work, for their artistry, those photographers are the ones that are conceptualizing, they're not button pushers. They're not even if you took out their camera, they'd still be able to conceptualize, paint it onto a canvas if they wanted to. You know what I mean? It's coming up with the idea that is going to separate you. As much as these machines will come into play, and it may narrow the field, certainly, as far as the more creative photographers, but you should be, as a photographer, pushing your creativity over your technical knowledge. The technical knowledge supports your creativity, but there's nobody that's necessarily going to hire you that you really understand the inverse square law.
Right.
Nobody's going to hire you for that. They're going to hire you because you have great ideas and vision, and those are the things, I think, that separate photographers from each other.
Well, let me say this, though. Let me counter that with a little bit of a, I don't want to say an argument, but a little bit of, I've been having this discussion this week with a couple of different people. And today on Facebook, someone posted a picture in a group that I'm in that was a group of like six executives on a stage in a place where their company had renovated this theater. And it was fantastic. It was lit well. It was posed well. It was great. But it wasn't a model. It wasn't Annie Leibovitz, and it wasn't a model on the rim of the Grand Canyon, and it wasn't anything like that. It was just really good, solid, this is good, solid portrait work. And one of the things that frustrates me a lot in our world and our field is how so much of what is really good, solid work, that is the work that will bring you money as a photographer and enable you to make a living, is not celebrated as much as it should be. Nobody gets excited about the perfect Gary Hughes headshot.
Yes, they do.
As much,
excited.
No, really, they don't. Not as much as they should, Gary. They will get excited about the bride on the rim of the Grand Canyon, but the really good headshot, they go, well, that's a nice headshot. And it frustrates me sometimes. And we see this in competition. You know, we see this in the magazines. We see it everywhere where all the stuff that is celebrated and everyone goes, wow, about it, the people go, you go wow about it because it's an image, is art. You see it, and I don't know who's in it. I don't care who's in it, whatever. I just know when I see it, I go, wow, that's really cool. And that's what we get excited about. But in our world, what we really try to do is please someone. What we really want to do is make a picture that mom wants to buy. And those pictures don't get celebrated as much in our world.
No.
When in fact, those are the pictures that you need to learn to shoot if you want to make a living as a professional photographer.
Right.
And I was thinking about today, one of the reasons that I famously don't do well in competition is because I have no interest in pleasing anyone other than my client. I don't care if other photographers like my work. All I care about is if my clients like my work. And people will say, well, you should try and shoot something specifically so the judges will like it. And I'm like, I don't care if the judges like my... I've spent so much time trying to learn to please my clients that I'm exhausted. And I don't want to have to try and learn to please somebody other than my client, you know. I've said this to you that, you know, I wish we saw more, hey, here's a great shot of a family of four. Just a family of four. But it's well lit and it's well posed and this will make you money. You know, and we don't celebrate that enough. And
it's easy because we want the thing that's visually impactful and the thing that, you know. I was on Facebook yesterday and a friend of mine who's a model posted that they had done a photo shoot with a photographer. And I said, and I always like, ooh, I want to check out their work. And this guy's work was just stupendous, but everything was like a gorgeous landscape with a very small woman in a very flowy dress. Right. You know, like, and I'd be like, you know, I really thought about it. I said, if you take the woman out, it's just like a fairly mediocre landscape photo. Yeah. And here's the other thing. It's like, these are great, and they may bring a lot of attention to this photographer's work and even may get them business with regular clients. But I said this about my wedding photography for years, is that people will hire you for the really interesting, sexy, cool images. But when it comes down to what they actually want and will buy, like 90 images out of 100 that they like are going to be the smiling looking at the camera or table shots,
right,
or pictures of them dancing with their friends or coming down the aisle. Like the great big epic sort of shots, those are all great and they love them. But most couples that I've worked with, they don't hang big wedding images on their walls of themselves.
No.
Not many people how many people's houses do you go into and there's just a massive picture of just the two of them? You know, it's almost always a family picture or everybody's looking at the camera or it's a nice art piece. But people have a certain sense of like, I don't want to put a giant size picture of my own face in my house.
Right. And, you know, I had this happen when I was up in Minnesota and Michelle, let's just say last name something Italian. Michelle, whose last name something Italian, Canon Explorer of Light. And she was giving a program on posing families and family portraits.
Celentano, Michelle Celentano.
Thank you. Just a delight. She's a delight, by the way.
I judged with her at WPPI last year. She's awesome.
Oh, I just love her.
Really great.
Yeah, I just love her. And she was giving this program, and someone actually asked her about competition and said, all these images you're showing, none of them, they all break so many rules. And she said, yeah, that's not, I'm trying to please the people who are going to buy the photo. And the people who buy the photo, they love it when you stack everybody on top of each other and have everybody hugging and stuff like that. And they don't care that there's a lot of hands.
Absolutely.
And they don't care about a lot of that stuff. And while this sounds like it could be a rant for there to be change, what it's really about more is I find what's interesting about me is that I am more interested in that sort of photo. Like, if I see the photo of the Grand Canyon bride, I'm like, okay, I don't go gaga over it. But then when I see the really good executive board portrait, I'm like, ooh, I want to look at that. You know, how's the lighting on that? And how's the posing on the board members? And because that's something
like
that affects me. In my real world,
like a
that
true
affects
wedding
me.
Photographer.
I'm just saying.
You want to see the stuff that you know that they were crammed into a tiny room and up against the wall and used basically like a bounce the speed light off the wall. And you're like, how did they do that? It's like, if I had the Grand Canyon and a model who's a size 2 and a dress that's with a 40-foot train, there's no way I couldn't nail that shot.
Right, exactly.
But could that guy go into a boardroom and make those guys look good?
Right, well, I just know that tomorrow I may be in a position where I have to shoot a picture like that, and so I can learn something from this picture. Whereas, while you can still certainly learn something from the model in front of the Grand Canyon, it's more abstract what you're going to. Well, this is an interesting lighting pattern or an interesting – you're going to learn something. But you're not going to learn as much as if you're looking at a picture that's exactly the sort of picture you're going to shoot tomorrow, you know. And I just think it's funny because it was this morning. I was just gaga over this photo and I commented on it because I realized, you know, only guys like me are gaga over your boardroom photo. Everyone else is gaga over the, oh, here's a maternity picture taken underwater.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't care about that. Yeah, because I'm not going to get a call tomorrow from someone who says, can you take a maternity picture of me underwater? But I am going to get a call from someone who wants me to take a board photo.
I am going to give you so much crap when you start doing underwater maternity, boo. I'm going to give you such a hard time.
I don't know. I guess I'm just. I don't know what's the word, pedantic or whatever. I don't know. I'm just normal, not normal, but I guess I just don't get excited about fanciful photography that much. It's the bread and butter stuff I love.
Yeah, that's because you're a photographer. Maybe if you're on the other end, if you're on the client end and you have a baby to be photographed. Although I can't see you getting photographs like that done of your family either. You're too much of a cynic to have like Bobby and the girls draped in long fabric flowing underwater. No. Would you put that on the wall in your house?
Well, no, I would. I would not necessarily commission it. I might would, but I'm actually about to have that done. Lisa Hatcher, a good friend of ours who does fanciful stuff, is going
She's going to do whimsical, very crazy whimsical stuff.
And I should point out, if you ever see her work, 90% of it is actually captured in camera.
But yeah, she builds sets and does a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, a lot of it, you assume it's all done in Photoshop, but she builds a lot of stuff. And she's actually going to do my two daughters. She's going to do a picture of my two daughters, and it's all, it's free reign. It's, here's my two daughters, and do whatever you want to do with it, you know.
That'll be awesome.
Yeah, so we'll, and we'll see what that, and it's something I would never do. It's totally outside of my expertise or range. I would never even begin to approach something like that. And so that's going to be very cool because it would be a very unique piece of art. So, yeah, I would do that.
And then you could photograph them in a boardroom immediately.
Exactly. That's exactly. Like. Well, you know why she's doing it? Because I shot her daughter's wedding.
I remember. That was a great wedding.
So there you go. You know, she, you know, she's bored by the kind of stuff that I do, and I have no interest in doing the kind of stuff that she does, so we're trading it out.
By your powers combined.
Yes. Wonder Twin.
That was really a Gen X joke for those who watch Captain Planet. Wonder Twins would be your generation.
Like, yes, it would be.
Assume form of cynical old photographer. You know.
Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice.
Back at the Halls of Justice.
All right, we need to wrap this thing up.
We do indeed.
What have you got coming up?
Well, right now, I will probably be back in the L.A. area, Riverside, in August 19th and 20th, but that's still kind of forming. The next thing, really, that I've got going on is our return home to Focus 2017 in Orlando, Florida. That's going to be the homecoming for the Photobomb Live podcast. And we're really, really excited to be a part of Focus. Got a great speaker lineup. It's really, I think it's going to be just maybe the best it's been in many years there this year at Focus. It's going to be really cool. Also coming up is that I'm going to be kicking it off, actually, the IPC Live. I will be the first day because you're coming in late. So I will actually be
pre-recorded.
We don't know.
Just so you, we don't know that you'll be the first day. It depends on how late I am.
Yeah. So they're bringing me in to do like a segment that they can just roll tape
right.
In case you're late.
In case my plane goes down. I will be
your understudy anytime for IPC.
And let me point out, by the way, not that this is the sort of thing that bothers me, but if you look at the PPA website, now they put in there that watch IPC Live with Gary Hughes and Bure Perry. So I just want to point out that you're emergency filling
that?
In. Yes, yes. Not only are you now listed as a co-host, but you got top billing.
No.
Yes.
No. Yeah, okay. IPC Live kickoff, I'm listed with Gary Hughes, and then IPC Live broadcast is with Bure Perry.
Oh, then they changed that. Then they've changed that because
it, probably it, because Rich saw it and went, no, Bure's going to lose his damn mind. You've got to change.
No,
this
it's
right
it, no, no. It's possible that I mentioned it to Rich and then he called them immediately.
It's possible. Also coming up in January, mark your calendars for those of our listeners. I know we got a few listeners over there in the UK. I will be speaking and judging at the Society of Wedding and Portrait Photographers Convention in London in January. That'll be a lot of fun. It'll be very cold, but I will be there. And as of right now, I think that's pretty much all I got booked. Coming up in the next month's issue of Shutter Magazine, I have an article coming out that's my three go-to lighting setups for high-volume headshots. So keep an eye out for that.
Oh, fantastic. Shutter Magazine?
Shutter Magazine.
Okay. July 6th, I will be at the Professional Photographers of Mid-Florida Guild. Go to ppfmf.com. That's in Lakeland. July 30th is IPC Live. Go to stream.theipc.org. August 15th, I will be at Professional Photographers Guild of the Palm Beaches. That is ppgpb.com. August 16th, I will be at Professional Photographers Guild of Florida, which is ppgf.com. September 9th through the 11th, it's Focus, ruinfocus.com. September 29th through October 2nd, I'll be at the Exposed 2017 conference, which is being held at Jekyll Island Conference Center. Go to gppa.com. That's in Georgia.
That is a great location. That conference center is literally on the beach. It's unbelievably cool. Like, you could walk out the front door of the conference center onto the sand.
Oh,
it's
cool.
Amazing.
All right. Yeah, and then really coming up January 14th, it's in 2018, of course, Imaging USA. Go to imagingusa.org. And the lineup for Imaging USA was released this week.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's on our website as well. That's on the Facebook page as well. So you can see the entire lineup of everyone who's speaking at Imaging this year.
Huge lineup. Super exciting. Got some great talent this year, including someone I know named Mr. Bure Perry.
Yes, I will be speaking. First day in the demo room, very first day, I'm the kickoff man in the demo room, which means expect nothing to work.
And expect there to be five people in a 1,500-seat auditorium.
Yeah, because nothing is going to work. You can just guarantee that nothing is going to work. They're going to have technical difficulties, so I'm the guy who gets the technical difficulties. You can find us online at facebook.com/photobombpodcast, or you can find us at photobombpodcast.com. You can find Gary at hughesfioretti.com, and you can find me at bureperry.com. We will see you back here again next week.
See you later.